This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Alan Morgan, CEO of the National Rural Health Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Rural Health's Alan Morgan next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. One result of the recent budget reconciliation bill was a significant cut to Medicaid. Alan Morgan, CEO of the National Rural Health Association, says the attempt to cut spending to reduce taxes is a major threat to rural health care facilities that already are facing challenging financial circumstances.
Yeah, well, it's a challenging time for rural health nationwide. And it's been well documented, well talked about in the media. I think most people understand you've got workforce shortages that have historically plagued small communities. You've got challenges of just keeping the doors open of rural hospitals. We've had a rural hospital closure crisis. We've had nursing homes close. More than 500 have closed in the U.S. Over the last 10 years. And you've just got a challenge of providing high-quality access to healthcare in these small towns. So now that being said, you really do have some good quality out there, and we can talk about that later in the program as well, too. I'd love to.
Let's talk about the populace and the age of the population of the U.S. Is there a difference between rural and urban areas?
Rural is not a small version of urban. That's a huge misconception. It is a unique healthcare environment. And that's because your population is older, it's sicker, it's poorer. You've got a higher percentage of elderly people, and you've got a higher percentage of people with high health needs, but in many cases, the inability to pay. And what we've done in hundreds of small towns across the U.S. is cluster these populations together, which makes it really difficult to operate healthcare, and in particular, keep hospital doors open because of that.
We have an issue in agriculture of having enough veterinarians in place to support the livestock industry, but I would also bet that you have the same situation that if a young man or woman went through college and went through med school and now they want to practice medicine, the big city and the bigger hospital pays more money than does a rural institution that's unstable from the very beginning.
That is true, but the issue from a health perspective is more fundamental, and it's really easy to understand, and I cannot believe it hasn't been better addressed as a nation. Fewer than 5% of the incoming medical students come from small towns. You've got 95% or more of the incoming medical students coming from upper-income urban families. They go to school in urban areas. They do their residency in urban areas. Then we're dumbfounded. They don't want to practice in Flush, Kansas. It just doesn't make sense. And, it cuts across all industries. I get it, whether it's whatever it is, but we need to do a better job of making sure that our kids know there's a future for them in healthcare. They can stay in their hometowns. They can live in the communities they want to be. And just recruiting the wrong students in really is the major issue we're facing when it comes to workforce and healthcare.
This comes close to heart for me because after the family farm went apart, my dad went into emergency medicine. And he recognized this about our small community, that there were a lot of elderly. There were a lot of people who had heart conditions. And in the case of someone who is facing a serious medical condition, the time to service is so critical. And if you can shorten that, there's opportunity. And if it's longer, then their outlook is much different.
That is a central challenge that we have with rural health care. You simply do not want to live in a community or work on a farm where you're more than 30 minutes from a 24/7 emergency room service. It's just not safe, number one. So when you don't have those hospitals as anchors in the community and the surrounding farms, you create a dangerous situation, and you create a situation where a lot of elderly have to move out of those communities. And conversely, if you don't have maternity care, you can't get the young kids to move into those communities. So when you talk about maintaining 24/7 emergency room services and maintaining access to maternity care, you're really talking about the future of rural America.
Former Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and I spent plenty of time talking about this, and he raised the issue of rural development and the fact that our kids don't want to come back into areas that don't have good schools. They don't want to come back to an area that doesn't have good health care. They don't want to come back to a place that they don't have broadband. So these are essential services to maintain, and if you're losing those, then you're really losing a stronghold for the future of rural communities.
Yeah, small business, the schools, and healthcare, those are the three legs of the stool for maintaining rural America. Now, one thing that Secretary Vilsack really understood, and I miss his grasp of this, is that in most rural counties, healthcare is the largest employer. And oftentimes we separate and we think, well, let's talk about health and let's talk about hospitals. You're really talking about the economic engines in a lot of these small towns and rural counties. And Secretary Vilsack recognized that and recognized you can't separate economic development away from health care.
So what about consolidation? Have we seen larger institutions taking over the smaller? Has that been for the better?
Yeah, I want to be careful in my response to this, because what we're seeing now that I think is a great move is rural hospitals and clinics networking, doing formal networking arrangements with other rural hospitals and rural clinics, be able to share purchasing power and other means to make sure that they're viable. Successful partnerships, whether formal or informal, with large institutions, they work as well. And you see health systems that have a focus on rural that are successful. At the end of the day, you want to make sure there's still local control and local input into your healthcare organizations. Once you start extracting that out and you have someone far off in an urban area making financial decisions, sometimes that's where you get into issues of looking just at the bottom line and not of the health of the community. So I want to go back and make sure I say this correctly. There are a lot of different ways to make sure you maintain those access points, and having formal arrangements with large urban providers is one, and a possible successful one as well. It's shown, but you just have to be careful that at the end of the day, you're meeting the needs of the local community, and it can be done.
So in the same vein of rural development, let me bring up a conversation with Shirley Bloomfield of NTCA, the Rural Broadband Association. And she gave the example in Tennessee of a small community where rural broadband had just been stepped up. And a patient was having a heart condition and was not able to get to Nashville to their specialist, but they were able to connect with broadband. And the local administrators were able to provide the service and, in essence, save the person's life. So this goes back to having a place to go and then connecting to those professionals who may be able to provide care.
100%. And let me start by saying Shirley is one of the brightest and most respected professionals in Washington, D.C., so you're talking to the right people there. And one thing that we, both Shirley and I, have talked about is sometimes telehealth is looked at as a band-aid or a second-hand solution. I have seen cases personally where there has been better access provided, in particular when you're looking at cancer care, where you're able to be in a small town and have one of the state's top professionals beam in and be able to diagnose and treat the patient there remotely. And so I think we need to look for more of those options and solutions, but it comes down to broadband. We have to have that to make this work.
Well, we also need the lights on at a facility. And that's
yes.
where we come to this particular point. Up to now, you've described a situation that has been challenging, but yet many rural healthcare facilities are still open. So in an effort to save funds, the budget reconciliation package went through. Much debated about cuts to nutrition programs, but also very much debated cuts to Medicaid. How important yeah. is Medicaid to hospitals overall, and how is that different or similar to rural institutions?
Yeah, one of the major discussion points of the legislation that passed was the potential impact on rural America. So I'm thrilled the fact that rural got the attention it deserved. However, to your point, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is the legislation that was approved by Congress is going to remove what's been estimated as $155 billion over 10 years out of rural communities. And what that translates to is roughly 1 in 4, 1 in 5 rural Americans is currently on Medicaid. And I think sometimes people think, oh, that's a Medicaid issue. That doesn't impact me. The payments don't go to the Medicaid patients. They go to the healthcare providers treating them. And in the United States, we all love healthcare. We just want someone else to pay for it. And at the end of the day, it comes to these small-town healthcare providers who are the ones that are picking up the bill for those that don't have health insurance. So now in a situation where you have almost half of the nation's rural hospitals currently operating in the red, in a negative margin, and now you're extracting out $155 billion over 10 years, I think what was done incorrectly in this debate is people were saying this may close rural hospitals. That's inaccurate. It will close rural hospitals if these cuts actually go through.
So where do you go now?
Well, let's talk about a good part within this legislation. And I want to make sure, you know, this is apples and oranges. It's different things, but it needs to be talked about. You've got $155 billion taken out of the system over 10 years, but in the next 5 years, you have $50 billion put into a rural transformation fund. Now, the details of this are still unknown, but over the next 5 years, the federal government, working with state governments, are going to put out funds for hopefully these local healthcare providers to be able to strengthen their information technology within their facilities, strengthen their facilities, and address issues to sustain them for the long term. It's not, you know, it's apples and oranges. $50 billion and $155 is not the same. But hopefully this seed funding will get us in a better position moving forward.
What is key about those funds and how they're administered for rural facilities?
Yeah, I think the real key aspect of this is it actually going to get to your small town hospital? I mean, that is going to be the discussion, because anytime the federal government puts out that amount of money, well, guess what? Everyone is rural at heart, and you're going to have already you have large urban institutions making the case why it should go to them because they treat rural patients that come into their facilities in urban areas. This has to make sure that it has to go to rural hospitals, rural health clinics, rural community health centers, number one. And number two, it really needs to be focused in on sustainability and how do we transform from treating sick people into making sure we keep our residents healthy in the first place.
I can't help but note the information that you provided ahead of time about how critical Medicaid is to these rural facilities, because there's so many people in rural area that don't have insurance coverage.
Yeah, it's how we've designed the healthcare system, unfortunately. And again, we've clustered a population with high health needs and the inability to pay. And it is so frustrating to anyone from a small town, this this misconception of that the reason why our hospitals are struggling is because people are leaving the small towns and, you know, the management isn't good. That just isn't true. What is true is we put too many patients with high health needs in these communities and expect the healthcare providers to pay those bills. And that just, it's non-sustainable.
Rural hospitals expected to see a 21% decline in Medicaid reimbursement because of provisions of this piece of legislation?
It is not unusual for a rural hospital to see, gosh, 60 to 70% of its inpatient volume be government-sponsored. Medicare, Medicaid, Indian Health Service, VA, and it's just the nature of the beast here. And when you are the federal government, when I say you and the state governments are the primary payer for health care, you have to be a good partner. You have to be a good partner. This isn't about handouts. It isn't about subsidies. It's about being a good business partner.
So what segment of our society is going to suffer the most? Is it the elderly? Is it children? Is it middle class? Who are the ones that suffer because of this?
I honestly think it's the 62 million Americans that live in rural America, period, because these Medicaid cuts, again, are going to the provider, not to the Medicaid beneficiary. And because of that, you run the risk of losing your small-town doctor, losing your small-town hospital, because they just can't keep the doors open. And so it is the farmer and rancher who thought, that's not my problem, that's a Medicaid issue, that now is going to determine or find out potentially they're shutting the doors on my local hospital because they can't make the finances work anymore.
So we've been talking about facilities, but you identified, again, in the preparation leading up to our conversation, it's not just rural hospitals, it's rural healthcare clinics, it's long-term care facilities, and gosh, that becomes so important in rural areas. It's the EMS agencies, it's the community health centers. This isn't just a hospital, this is a whole gambit of healthcare.
It's the health system. You're right. In many cases, and you got everyone that's listening to this, it's from a small town, you know, your local hospital is a community asset. In many cases, they do also run the EMS. They do run the long-term care. They do the community benefit programs. They are a hub of healthcare in the community. But it is the ecosystem of healthcare delivery in these small towns.
I think back to what my father talked about. In our rural area, there was a BLS ambulance service, basic life support. It had EMTs on board. But an ALS service had paramedics who were in communication with doctors that could do so much more for a patient. There's a difference, but it costs a lot more to have an ALS yep. service. And if it's not available, now you're talking about life and death for individuals.
I cannot think of any aspect that better represents rural America than our EMS system, because it's by hook, nook, and cranny, we have cobbled together an EMS system. And by that, I mean, sometimes the EMS is a private company. Sometimes it's run by the hospital. Sometimes it's run by the county. You've got all these different modes and modalities. Sometimes the EMS are paid, sometimes they're volunteers. So that creates a system that also makes it very difficult to, from a policy perspective nationwide, fix and address going ahead. We really are relying heavily on volunteers when it comes to EMS in a rural sense. I don't have to tell anyone on this call, you have to have EMS availability. And in fact, many cases, when the hospital closes, the EMS becomes the de facto healthcare service, which, you know, that's a terrible economic development slogan. Come to our community and we'll get you out of here as fast as we can if something goes wrong. But unfortunately, when you lose a hospital, that becomes your strategy.
So, Alan, now in the aftermath of the big, beautiful bill, the reconciliation, and in this time of ramping up the rest of the story, if we will, what should be told? What should be of a concern for rural residents, and what should their message be on your behalf?
Yeah, the one thing, I'm from a small town, but what I really like about rural healthcare is it's nonpartisan. It has always been nonpartisan. It remains nonpartisan. Republicans, Democrats, the White House, all three understand the challenge. They understand the relevance and importance. The takeaway message is keep hammering that home. You're going to have your local representatives out in the communities. Grab them when you see them and say, hey, what are you doing to keep our health care local? And then when they answer that, then say, no, what are you doing to keep our health care local? I know they've got their sound bites, but really share with them the relevance, the importance as a policy issue. They can't let this fall off the front burner. Following the passage of the legislation, many Republicans have said that they're going to work now to remove these cuts going forward. Everyone recognizes the impact that this will have. We've got to keep the pressure on.
So it's simple to see that the large facility serves more people, so more money should go there. And the small community doesn't serve as many, so how can you justify spending an amount for a smaller population?
Yeah, from a policy perspective, I've never understood the fact that rural healthcare takes up just a tiny fraction of the overall spending for healthcare, a tiny fraction. But we're always the first to get cut, and the reason why is it's easy to do. We're easy targets, and many times we're focused on other rural issues and not on health care. At the end of the day, you've got life expectancies that are 20 years less than urban residents in many cases. People are dying 20 years younger in rural areas than they are in urban. There's under no circumstance where you live should dictate how long you live or the quality of your life. That's unacceptable. And from a policy perspective, a little bit of money goes a long ways. They just have to continue to be a focus on rural populations and rural communities.
Alan, in our conversation thus far, it seems as though we've painted a pretty cloudy picture of the future for rural health care. Is there a silver lining in the midst of all this and how you can survive what appears to be a cut into resources?
Yeah, thank you very much for asking that. And it's an untold story that we have in rural America and specific rural health. Rural faces enormous challenges, and we've just covered how it's going to get a lot worse. But these challenges drive innovation. And we're not doing a good enough story, a job of telling the story on the quality of care that's being delivered in these rural hospitals and clinics. Nationwide, multiple studies have shown primary care general surgery has equal or higher quality measures and results than urban facilities. And it makes sense. You're a small-town doc and hospital, they know what they're doing. They focus in on primary care. They do an exceptional job. So I don't want to leave this discussion without saying these challenges are driving telehealth innovations. It's driving delivery of care innovations. You can trust and rely on your local clinician and your local hospital and be assured you're going to get great quality care. We just need to make sure that they still have the ability to stay there and deliver that care into the future, and that's what we're talking about.
What are pieces of legislation or opportunities where the National Rural Health Association and others can chime in and try to offset some of the cuts that have come in reconciliation?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question. Thank you very much. And here's the easy thing. Go on your computer and type in the words rural health, just two words, rural health. Google, Yahoo, Bing, whatever you do. Our association is always the first, second, or third that pops up. And right on the front page, you can click on policy and you can see all the legislation that currently is being considered in Congress and what will make a difference. We've got to focus in on rural hospitals. I have to be honest, rural hospitals and workforce. Those are the two things we need to make sure that we maintain that access to care that's so very important.
Is this putting more pressure on states to maintain health care coverage in rural areas?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we've heard so much about the federal level, it's going to continue to be a big discussion. But the fight really has shifted to the states. And the states, each one of them, they recognize the political power that rural communities have. And we're going to see a lot more legislation coming in the near future regarding licensure, regarding telehealth, regarding governmental support at the state level for these facilities.
Alan Morgan, we want to thank you for taking time to share the story of rural health and the story of the National Rural Health Association. It sounds like there are plenty of challenges, but also plenty of opportunities. Thanks for being with us today. And this is Open Mic. And, sir, you've got the last word.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the focus on rural. Rural is a great place to live and work. Let's make sure we fight for it.
Our thanks to Alan Morgan, CEO of the National Rural Health Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Chap Nellie.